Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Advotech Analyst Call for Q3 2020 Financial Results hosted by Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Kimberly Pace. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you. I would like to welcome everyone to Agrotech's Q3 FY20 earnings conference call. From the management, we have Mr. Sachin Gopal, the Managing Director, and Mr. KPN Srinivas, the CFO. We should begin the call with a brief discussion on the quarter results, and post that, we will have a Q&A session. I shall now hand over the call to Mr. Sachin. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Kimberly, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for taking the time out to be with us today. We'll try and give you an update on the quarter, and then as Kimberly says, take the questions. So overall, as you would have seen from our reviews, we had a broad-based growth in the food business. We grew the total food business in volume by about 17% and in value also by about 17%. So pretty much both volume and value are growing together. In total, therefore, the business went up to about 70 crores. At this level, it translated into about 18% of our total volumes, 31% of revenues and 43% of gross margin. So which is pretty consistent with how we'd like it to be, in the sense that we need a higher revenue per ton from our strategic part of the business, and we also need a higher margin, gross margin per ton from that part of the business. I will now proceed to give you an update in terms of the details behind each of the six categories that we compete in. And after that, we'll go into the P&L, and this will also include a cover, obviously, on the lower profit before tax that we recorded in the current quarter. All right. So the first category that we compete in is ready to cook snacks, right? We've talked about this, and it's also updated in our website in terms of our November presentation. As you would have seen from the results, we recorded about a 19% growth in ready to cook, both in volume and value. However, as we also mentioned in the release, about in the revenue growth, about 190 basis points came about because of sweet corn, right? So that the idea is that you should get to know how is the base business doing and what is the contribution that they're getting from the new products. In volume terms, actually, the increase was more from the sweet corn. So if you take away the sweet corn, then our volume growth in the popcorn business was 15.5%. So roughly, therefore, we can conclude that the popcorn business continued to register strong growth of about 16% in volume and about 17% in value in the quarter three, right? Delivering in aggregate, therefore, for the ready-to-cook business, growth of about 13% in volume and about 15% in value. We continue to see the segment growing strongly and the business growing strongly. The only note of caution that we would put here is that, as you can see, we had a significant impact of commodity prices in our quarter three performance, right? That occurred actually quite quickly between November and December. So we have started to move up prices in the marketplace, and also therefore we'll be taking necessary actions in terms of other lines of the P&L such as media, right? But overall, I think continued strong growth so far, and you know we feel we're in good shape to close the year well and start the next year. Our ready-to-eat snacks business is performed a little differently from the ready-to-cook business. Now, this is an important business for us, not necessarily from a margin standpoint, but from a strategic standpoint. So let me explain. Of all the categories that we compete in, ready-to-cook, ready-to-eat, spreads, breakfast cereals, and confectionery, this is actually the single largest category that we compete in. The total category size is in the region of about $5 billion, it's about 35,000 crores. And because of the sheer category size, this becomes important, because as we open new distributors and we open, we undertake expansion of retail coverage, this is the first product that our distributors take, right? It looks like confectionery is the second largest category that we are competing in now, but this is definitely the first. And then over time, therefore, you know, the distributor tax trust, you know, is selling other products, ready to cook, peanut butter, so on and so forth. A lot of our growth of ready to cook and peanut butter this year is driven on the back of distribution expansion. And the starting point of that distribution expansion is the ready to eat snacks category. So this growth in volume of about 13% and revenue of 5% is actually lower than what we would like it to be. On a year-to-date basis, it looks okay at 23% and 16%, but even that, we would like it to be higher. We'd like it to be in the region of about 20%-30%, because that will put us in good shape in terms of continuing distributor expansion. So we are working on this. I would say right now, the quarter three revenue growth, as we mentioned, really reflects the swings in prior year's volume. There was a lot of swings last year. We had launched a new product called Juicy Tomato Puffs in extruded snack. We had the Unmaa in about probably June, July. We had the Unmaa Fire in November. So our base has also, you know, had significant changes. So that's why you see this quarter-on-quarter swings. This is something that as management we are working on, and I expect that by the time, you know, we get into the new year, we will be in a robust shape to have good growth of Max Snacks in line with our expectations, so that our distributor expansion and coverage expansion continues to do well. The most strategic part of this business is the ready-to-eat popcorn category. That has continued to do well. And I think in volume terms, in volume terms, we saw growth of about, I think, in the region of about 31%. Just give me a moment. Yeah, 31%. Value, however, was a little lower, largely because of a higher contribution of some of the other between the lower revenue per ton packs. So, work underway, delivering a revenue growth of about 15%-16%, but we need more, and obviously, we need it profitably. All right. On the spreads business, we saw a very good, very, very good performance. Our total spreads business performed at about 24% growth in volume and 23% in value, right? If you take away the cocoa spread, the chocolate spreads from this, the peanut butter business, which is our base business, also saw a very strong growth of about 21% in volume and about 19% in value, right? So we had told you, we had mentioned this last time in the quarter call. We said that quarter two had the highest base last year, and we expect, you know, a lot of the actions that we took last year resulted in our getting back market share. That is starting to be visible now. Year-to-date figures are about 17% and 15%, but given the response to the new product, the chocolate spread is doing well. Many of you can, I'm sure you can see it in the market, you can talk to retailers. I think we're having reasonable degree of offtake. The plant is produced in our, you know, the product is produced in our own plant, so it's very, very cost competitive. So I would say we're in a good shape, not only to close this year in terms of a good growth rate, but also to set a very, very good ground as far as next year is concerned. Right. I missed out when we were talking about the ready-to-cook category, even the Active Sweet Corn. The sweet corn has been well received. We're rolling it out, and I think it is starting to, if you will, justify our expectations that in areas where cold chain, competitive cold chain is not really available, this will be a great product for us to actually expand distribution and give more strength to our distributors, right? So if you take areas where distances are very large, where cold chain starts to become extremely expensive, sweet corn is actually a great product for us to build our distribution network and super distributor network. Okay. In terms of breakfast cereals, we have now been in this category now for about, let's say about 5 months, 5 to 6 months, right? And our product, which is Sunrock Pops, is doing very well. You can see here that it's contributed to about 120 basis points of value growth in the quarter. In terms of volume growth, its contribution to the foods business was 100 basis points. I should add that the reason why we've given these figures and in this manner, which is contribution to foods growth, is so that we don't really have a base for these categories. So this will give you an idea of the total foods growth of about 17%, how much came from cereals, chocolate confectionery, sweet corn, and cocoa on it, right? So if you take the total of these two, it's about 190 basis points. And then if you add the sweet corn and the coconut spreads, it will be another 150 basis points. So you can assume, therefore, that the balance part of the business was probably about growing at about 13%-14%, and the incremental of which has gotten us up to 17% has come from new products. The cereals confectionery is a cereals category, is an interesting category for us and an important one. And let me explain to you why we think we are winning in this category and we will win further in this category. Over time, the breakfast cereals category in developed markets is actually not growing. I'm not sure very much. It's either flat or declining. But a lot of breakfast cereal manufacturers have actually tried to move into the snack space, right? The reason why they are doing so is that people are consuming more occasions per day, right? The average number of occasions now, and you guys have all seen different research. Some of you have sent it to me also, like the more recent Mondelez research, is about 7 times a day. And that stacks up with other research that we've seen as well. So as breakfast cereals or cereals are consumed in other parts of the day, it gives us a differential advantage versus breakfast cereal manufacturers, right? We have two large multinational competitors who are competing with similar products, and we are actually performing very, very well compared to both of them. And not because we are a breakfast cereal company, but because we are not a breakfast cereal company, right? So when you look at breakfast cereal consumed as snacks, from a consumer perspective and from a supply chain perspective, they are different from breakfast cereals consumed as breakfast cereals. So let me elaborate. A breakfast cereal which is consumed as a breakfast cereal will willingly be had with milk. No question, that's the logic, it stacks up. However, a breakfast cereal which is consumed as a snack on other occasions during the day is not going to be had with milk. It might be just had on its own, right? So we have the advantage that most of the product configuration of our competitor is designed only for a breakfast cereal, but our product is designed for a cereal to be consumed as a snack. And the other is, all of our competitors in breakfast cereals do not have the same logistical advantages that we have with our multi-plant network, right, across the country, right? So, in other words, we have multiple plants, so, and we have an infrastructure which is capable of handling bag snacks, right? Neither of the two other competitors whom we deal with have plants across the country. One has plants virtually from north to south along the western side of the country, and the other one has one plant in west and one plant in south. So we think we can win, the chocolate pillows, the pillow snack that we've launched is actually just the first. We've now started beefing it up with the launch of honey roasted oats, right? We will stay away with base commodity oats because we feel in the long term there won't be pricing power there, but with honey roasted oats we've already launched and it's starting to roll out. And we are looking at least one other product in the next 3 to 6 months, right? So it's in advanced stages right now, which will again leverage our extrusion capabilities, leverage our chocolate capabilities, and leverage the supply chain that we have as far as bag snacks is concerned. So overall, I think a very, very good entry. We're in strong shape. And obviously, in the current year, we've launched these products only towards the back half of the year. So our expectations next year from them will be significantly higher. And last, let me come to chocolate confectionery. This has been a very, very nice, I would say, positive news as far as we are concerned. Chocolate confectionery is a large category. It's estimated to be about 12,000 crores in total, right? And we launched first with a coconut variant, right? Our intention has never been to claim that we are a chocolate manufacturer. We're not a chocolate manufacturer, right? But we have entered the chocolate market with a proposition which is based around, not around so much around chocolate, but in our construction of the brand Duo is based on what's inside and therefore covered with chocolate, right? So coconut has an extremely healthy perception. It's viewed very well, right? And it's actually, not surprisingly, also a reasonably big product both in the US and the UK, right? So in the US, there are two products which are coconut based. I think both owned by Hershey's probably. One is Mounds and one is Peter Paul Almond Joy. One is just coconut and one is coconut with almond, right? They also do very well. They're big brands there. And in the UK, of course, Mars had developed the Bounty brand, right, in the UK. And it's a reasonably large player both in UK and across Asia, right, where there is a significant amount of coconut consumed. What we are finding is that coconut is universal across the country. It's not just consumed in along the coast where, you know, there's a lot of coconuts grown. It's northeast, west, south. It's consumed. It's an integral part of our daily rituals, our prayers, whatever we do, you know, it's considered very auspicious. So it has all the health halo around it, right? Not, which may not be true to the coconut oil, but it's true for coconut per se. So the product response has actually been very good. And it's flying off. So we will be investing in more packing capacity on this, and our attempt will be to actually get scale. How much, what percentage of the chocolate confectionery market we can capture with this, we don't know. But if I was to take our best estimate of US data, it could be in single digit of the chocolate confectionery market in total. So it's a large business. At this point in time, neither is Bounty there in the country, nor is Mounds there. So we are pretty much the only people with this product. So our focus now is how do we scale up quickly. At this point in time, obviously, we are pricing it very, very competitively so that, you know, we quickly gain legitimacy in the category. But we'll have to see how to manage the business mix so that we keep scaling up very, very rapidly, and we also are able to make some money on the product. So I would say it's a great entry. We will be following this up, obviously, with other variants so that we can improve the profitability of the category from our perspective. But the potential for growth is humongous. One of the things that all these new products have done is that they have increased, I think, or demonstrated the quality of coverage improvement that is capable in our network. So let me clarify. I was working in Hyderabad market last month, and we found that day we must have opened at least two new stores who otherwise we would not have been able to penetrate. So for example, we entered a pharmacy store, which normally we would have tried the peanut butter, but he wouldn't have bought it. But he took the chocolate, and on the back of it, we also sold him two bottles of peanut butter. Similarly, there was a corner store whom we had tried for some time. He took the chocolate. On the back of it, he took some bag snacks. So this is consistent of what we are experiencing across the country, which is on average, we are opening about 2 to 3 new stores within the same week. So that's great because that's revenue that is coming for our distributors without any additional cost because those beats are already being covered. The only incremental time is the time of the sales call and the time of the delivery, right? But which makes it worthwhile for our distributors and also for us. Similarly, in the case of sweet corn, we are able to penetrate, and I think more markets which are more down the line, where frozen is not so competitive, where people don't have any other option, whether it is distant markets or it's hill markets, we are getting those advantages, right? So the power of actually a robust portfolio, I think we are experiencing for the first time. So as far as chocolates is concerned, as I said, we will obviously work towards maximizing the potential of this. It's early days. We have to work through our first summer as well. But given the velocity that we are seeing on this product, that shouldn't really be an issue. Okay. Now coming to edible oils, as we mentioned in the commentary, I think our company efforts to address some declines that we had seen in the edible oil business for food. We had a 9% growth in volume, however, only a 2% growth in value. Now, just for you to understand, about 21 months ago, we had launched a 3-liter pack, right, of our premium edible oil. And our ratio was that the consumption of households, for the current consumption of households, 3 liters per month was probably a better addressing their monthly requirement for oil. We also sold it at a very, very attractive price, right, closer to where a lot of our competitors was. And as a result, therefore, you can see from the data, we are up, therefore, now about 1% in volume and about 2% in, but on a cumulative basis, down 2%, and in the quarter, up about 2% in volume. So we feel that the job in terms of getting our head above the 100 index is now pretty much addressed. We've, however, seen simultaneously a lot of spike in commodity prices. So you will see in the next 10 days that we will be increasing prices so that we minimize the impact of the negative impact of the commodity prices on our P&L and also on the gross margin attrition. To summarize, therefore, I think we've taken the right steps in terms of in terms of ensuring that we have sustainability of gross margin. We talked this from the beginning of this year. We talked about it in quarter one as well. But we need to have an oils business there which continually produces a good amount of money for us, because the foods business is growing and it's growing margin, all parts are good. So we just need to keep it at that level. So I think this correction we've taken, and it will stand us in good stead in the year ahead. Lastly, on edible oils, Crystal, there is really not much to report. This is pretty much a function of the market commodity cycle. And therefore, the ups and there were downs in the first 6 months. Those have come down in the quarter it's gone up. Overall, therefore, net sales for quarter three are 6% higher than prior year, reflecting largely volume-driven growth of about a 17% growth in foods, with a modest growth in edible oils ranging from about 2% to 3%. A&P for the quarter was higher than prior year by about 1.37 crores. By the time actually we saw this huge spike in commodity prices, we had obviously put in the A&P money. I know this could have been lower, but that's fair. Employee benefits at actually 11 crores were lower than prior year by about 1 crore. We've taken all the necessary actions to offset the impact of the lower gross margin on oil, but obviously it doesn't contribute to the whole thing, but some of this is reflected in employee benefits. The depreciation and amortization, as we mentioned in the notes, includes an amount of about 0.67 crores on account of Ind AS 116. And other income includes the impact of about 0.69 crore income from investment in mutual funds. So I think that's pretty much it. And therefore, as a consequence, profit before tax was lower for the quarter by about 34% versus prior year. Profit after tax was obviously the gap was not so much because we applied the lower rate of income tax. Let me check with Srinu whether I missed anything.
Everything is covered.
Okay, great. So, Kimberly, I think that's it from our side, and over to you, and we can take the questions as they come.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Sameer Gupta from India Infoline. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. This is Percy Pansaki here. I have a few questions. So firstly, on the ready-to-eat snacks, your value growth is just about 5%, which is sort of quite low given that you are on a very small scale right now, and probably 20-30% kind of growth rate is not sort of out of reach at this scale. So just wanted to understand what is happening there, and what are you doing to sort of improve the performance, and what kind of growth rate are you targeting in the ready-to-eat snacks? That's one. Secondly, your ad spends have gone up by almost 30% this quarter. So can you let us know which product categories are sort of receiving that delta ad spend? And also, if you can tell us what is your thought process in terms of allocating ad spends across different categories over the next 1 to 2 years? And thirdly, you mentioned that you're looking at distribution expansion now that you have a good portfolio. So if you can let me know in the last 6 months or 12 months, whatever is convenient for you, what is the number of distributors and the number of direct retail sort of outlet coverage that you've expanded either over the last 6 or 12 months? And also, what is your plan for the next 12 months on this? So these three questions, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Percy. So, yes, on RT snacks, let me explain why the 5%. As I explained and we've written in our release, there are some specific events in prior year which meant that the back half of prior year was higher, significantly higher than the first half of prior year, or rather specifically quarter three. One is that in the time of quarter three, on the 30th, on natural, we were just heading towards a very, very steep growth, right? We had climbed up and significantly between April and November, and then the fire incident occurred in Unnao. We still had stocks to service us through November and December, but from January and actually February, we started to see significantly lower volumes, right? So our expectation therefore is, or rather possibly cover the quarter, therefore we were in the case of Natros competing with a quarter which is probably our highest ever, and as we enter the quarter four, we expect therefore the impact of February and March and to be also reflected, and the actions that we are currently taking in expanding our Proteus distribution, particularly with the launch of the 10 rupees pack, should give us the growth numbers that we require on extruded snacks. As far as ready to eat popcorn is concerned, that continues to grow very well. Volumes are up, as I said, by about 31%. So we just need to modify the relationship between volume and value. This is a bit like we had last year on peanut butter. There are volume and value growth was very different because of the 1 kg pack, right? So in this particular case, in the case of RTE, it is a similar instance which is happening between the 5 rupee pack and the 10 rupee pack. Once we are able to correct it, it may take 1 or 2 quarters. That will also continue. So long as we have a volume growth of 30% course per se, I think we are doing okay. On extruded snacks, I think we had a very good launch last year of one variant, right? But the base therefore was much higher. So that is something I think we still need to correct. I would say in terms of our business model on each of these three categories, extruded will be the one where our business model today is probably the weakest, right? It does give us, however, tremendous benefits of scale in the plants, right? But that is something which is work in progress, and we will see. I won't be able to say that we exactly have the solution on that as clearly as we have it on ready-to-eat popcorn and tortillas, but we are working on it. In terms of our expected growth rate, it would be what I said. We would like to be growing this business by about 20 to 30%, right? In other words, if our total business is growing at 20%, and we 20% has eluded us for some quarters now, for several quarters now, but I think this quarter we've gotten up to 17, and clearly therefore, as from a management perspective, our expectation is now that we'll get to 20%, right? So, with the total portfolio growing at 20% or more than that, given the incremental that we're getting right now from the new categories, which is only in the early stages, right, we would expect bag snacks to be growing faster, right, as I said, to be able to establish the network coverage that we expect from this category. In terms of our ad spend, yes, I know it's up about 30%, but in absolute terms, frankly, it's not a lot of money. I think it's about 1.3. It's about 1.3 crores. The spending remains on where we feel we have the maximum strategic advantage, right? And we have obviously the best margins. So right now the spending is maximum or mostly or entirely on ready-to-cook popcorn and peanut butter, right? Let me elaborate on our philosophy behind spending. As you can see, we built many categories in the country. All of these didn't start off as A&P grade, right? Most of them started off with non-A&P grade margins, right? And over a period of time, as you manage the business, you build scale, you reduce cost, you build variants that give you a higher margin, you're able to deliver a margin which is advertising grade, right? When we started the peanut butter plant, we were probably working on a single digit margin. That's not the case today. So ready-to-cook and peanut butter have both reached that stage where they are A&P grade, right? And where we are happy to spend money. The other categories, some of them will make A&P grade, some of them may not make A&P grade, right? So, for example, a category like sweet corn, right, which is good, and it's a great extension and gives us a lot of muscle power, is probably not going to be A&P grade, right? Because we don't expect that it will deliver the same kind of margins as ready to cook. But a breakfast cereal will certainly be A&P grade. It will come to that level very, very quickly, right? Already the margins are looking good. And that's because we are competing in categories where our base competitors have very, very high expectations of margins, right? In a cereals category, typically, most multinationals would look for a margin which is in excess of 50%, right? Now, we don't need 50% for our P&L. We are happy to work at less, right? But we do have one advantage that because we are willing to work at less, we are probably the only national competitor in that category which is offering great value, right? Because remember, other local companies rely very heavily. So take an example of snacks, extruded snacks. Most of the companies rely very heavily on wholesale networks. None of those companies are willing to invest the 50-60 crores that we spend on an annualized basis on our sales organization, right? Our sales organizations, if you look at our SG&A without secondary freight, will be accounting for 60% of our SG&A, right? That's where we believe we are building competitive advantage. So on the one hand, we have multinationals with very high margin expectations. On the other hand, the local players are not willing to make that investment in retail coverage because if they do that, their EBITDA margins, which may look attractive today, are suddenly going to collapse. They will suddenly collapse, right? So the net result is we are very nicely placed. We are happy to work with a decent margin. We already have the scale. We have multiple plants across the country, and we have great products, right? We have absolutely great products. So I think we are in a happy shape. Both our competitors and breakfast cereals have stopped actually spending money on that category, which we would like them actually to spend. And one has actually discontinued and is re-entering the market. This was relaunched yesterday and the day before yesterday in Delhi and Calcutta. So we'll see. But I think we are in a great, great position in these categories. So breakfast cereals will certainly make ANC great, right? Which is our expectation and should be in the region of about 30%. Similarly, I think chocolate spreads will make 30% because we are making the product in our Jhagadia plant. The incremental cost is very, very low. We already have a great distribution network. We have demo capabilities to acquire consumers. It's great. I mean, the fact is that in a single quarter, we've added about 300 basis points of growth from our new products, right? So that's the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And our math actually is that it can deliver much more than that. And let's see, they're getting there. And chocolate confectionery, I think we will work our way through. I think our first step in chocolate confectionery is such a large category where we really don't have legitimacy. We have legitimacy with the customers as far as our capability to build new products, new categories. That for 100% we show. But this is a different kind of legitimacy and credibility that we require, but I think we've attained it. In the stores that we went in, the velocity is great. We're getting repeat orders. In many cases, we can't satisfy them. So I think the initial legitimacy that we required, we've got. Over the next few quarters, we'll work towards refining our business model, but it's probably going to be a pretty important part of our business going forward. Okay, so allocation of ad spend is covered in terms of where. In terms of distribution expansion, we will be north of 400,000 stores. As you know, we don't buy audit data, and we use our own internal data. I think our internal data right now is tracking to about 400,000-410,000 stores. We would have added probably in the region of 150-200 distributors in the last 12-15 months. So distributor expansion is happening. It's happening much easier because of the portfolio. Today, when we go to a distributor and say, "This is what we sell," he says, "Okay, this is fantastic," right? So it's happening well. However, we just need to be able to keep sustaining it and adding coverage. So our plan, we will cover off our plans for the new fiscal in the April call, right? By that time, we will also have a better idea of where we close. But certainly, we would like to continue to add distributors and retail coverage at a healthy pace as we've done in the last 12-15 months. Okay, thank you, Percy, and Kimberly, over to you. Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Sachin Himnani from Profit Research Equity Fund. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Sachin.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, sir. So I have a couple of questions, so I'm listing down together. First, we know that you don't buy Nielsen data and only sell annual numbers, but could you please share some qualitative insights for the distribution range in the number of stores for the branded food business? And the second, in terms of unique taste, how difficult it would be a competitor to replicate or give a better taste for popcorn and peanut butter? How much is the switching cost we think we have for our products? Thank you.
Okay, give me a moment. I'm just writing down the question.
Yeah.
Okay. So, in terms of distributors today, we'll be, I think, as we stand, about 1,200 distributors. And somebody also asked the question, where are we? As I said, mentioned, we are between, I think, 400 and 410,000 retail stores. That is as per recorded by our sales organization. Okay? My estimate would be that we have been adding in the last few years in the region of about, I would say, 30,000-40,000 stores on an annualized basis. That increase is happening, right? In terms of how complicated would it be for companies to replicate, Sachin, the fact is that barriers to entry are coming down, okay? Because of, what's it called, easier availability of information, right, via the internet, right? Information per se is today far more easily available than it was, let's say, a decade ago. A decade ago, there was a lot of manufacturing information that was kept inside companies, right, which other people didn't have access to. So let me share an example with you. We are not a chocolate company, right? We're not a confectionery company, right? So how did we actually manage to launch a Bounty or a Mounds type of chocolate, right? Logically, you would say it's impossible, right? You'd say your parent company, it's not in your parent company's portfolio. Why would you be able to do it? But the reality is we were able to do it because there's a lot of information available on the net. You can learn, you can check, you can experiment once you have the machine. So we've been working on this chocolate entry for about 4 years now. The first set of equipment that we imported from the U.S. came about 4 years ago in 2015. And then we imported other, let's say, other pieces of equipment. We also learned and solved problems using the internet. And there's a lot of information. So let me give you an example. When Mondelez closed down, Kraft closed down its operations in the U.K., they had an auction for their equipment. In the auction on the equipment, and you can actually, if you search on the internet, you can find it too, they had a floor-by-floor plan available for the public to see how the machines were being laid out. Now, this was untenable a decade ago. You just simply didn't have this kind of information, right? So today, there's a lot of data available. You can check. It's available in the public domain. So I would say barriers to entry are much lower today than they were a decade ago. Having said that, I think what we have to do is to gain scale and have low-cost structures available at as rapid a pace as is possible for us. So we are now, I think, in popcorn at a stage where we have significant scale, right? And what that scale enables us to do is to be very, very aggressively priced at the entry levels of the category, right? We can afford to make lower margins on a 10 rupee packet of popcorn as compared to a 30 rupee packet of popcorn. And that makes it very difficult for people to enter. There are a lot of people. If you go into the trade, you'll see a lot of people have been trying to enter popcorn for the last 10 years. But nobody is actually able to be more competitive than us at the entry point. It's absolutely not possible. And there has to be then a reason why the consumer would be willing to move from a brand like Act II, which he or she trusts, which is available with good value, guaranteed quality, and a great product, right? So I would say that's a good example of how we use our own in-house manufacturing facilities to get operating leverage, to get scale, to be able to fight the competitor, and continue to have share. That's the reason why, for example, you asked about peanut butter. As per a third party, and as you know, we don't buy data, our share of the peanut butter market has been constant at 34% for the last 5 years, right? Because we have the ability to fight. We have our own plants. We can reduce costs. We can innovate. We can do all of these things, okay? So I hope I answered both of your questions. And I would say, finally, it's an opportunity for companies like ours because we already have broad-scale coverage. We may not have 2 million stores coverage, but we're getting to 500,000, right? We already have very, very low-cost structures that we can compete with most of, at least all of our multinational competitors in a very, very cost-effective manner. And we today have a lot of knowledge in a lot of categories, right? That's also important because one of the things that we see is, let's say, you're a breakfast cereal manufacturer. The total dress material market is only 2,900 crores, right? So really, how much distribution can you build in a, if you compete in a category which is only 2,900 crores? But today we compete in 6 different categories and, you know, 5 different food categories, all of which are large. So it gives us a lot of scale. This whole portfolio is actually giving us a huge advantage. And that's one of the reasons why the growth rate has moved up from 40 to 70. And that too probably only with about 6 weeks or 7 weeks of impact. So when the full impact comes, that's when we expect to be able to cross that 20% mark, which has been, as I said, eluding us for a while. Okay, thank you. Kimberly, we'll go to the next question.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Dhwanil Desai from Turtle Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sachin. Good afternoon. 3 questions from my side. So the first question is, you know, we have, you know, in this quarter and last 2 quarters, we have launched 4 new products. And, you know, all these product launches, etc., will have its own cost in terms of initial cost of, you know, doing testing and, you know, those kind of things. So, you know, how do you see the cost structure on the P&L side panning out, you know, as, you know, as we launch new products and kind of stabilize at this phase? Second question is, you know, I think, you know, one feel that I'm getting is that, you know, for 250, 300 crore kind of a revenue, we are into, you know, 5-6 different categories, and wanted to know your views as to, you know, why wouldn't it take away focus in terms of scaling up few things nicely, then spreading it too thin. So if you can, you know, throw some light on that. And lastly, I think, you know, the whole thesis that we all are working on, including you, is that as we scale up the food business, the gross margins improve, and since the rest of the costs are fixed, the margin will flow through the P&L, and we'll have spend money on advertising, and the rest will go in terms of increasing the profitability. Now, you know, the joker in the pack is the oil business, and I think, you know, at least for last 2-3 quarters, that's been playing spoiled sport. So how, I mean, how do we, you know, handle and how do we see this panning out in next 2-3 years in terms of kind of gaining profitability and growing our bottom line at, you know, 15-20%? These are the 3 questions.
Thank you, Anand. All very good questions. So, yes, the startup costs are there as far as the new products is concerned. Probably, I think we would end up in terms of, in the current year, you know, with all the testing costs, the write-off costs that you have, the initial very high degree of labor because you're not producing, you're not getting the output. I think it will be in the region of at least 1 or 2 crores, right? 1 to 2 crores would be our estimate of how much we have already probably invested in the first 9 months, but it's not uniform across categories, right? So it's more in some of the new products and it's less on others. So let me clarify. The categories which are adjacencies, the amounts are not actually that significant, right? They might be 5-10 lakhs. So for example, when you look at extruded snacks like Pops, extruded cereals, the amount is very low because we already know how to produce it. We have machines, those machines we are all familiar with, so it's just an adjacency. Similarly, in the case of coconut, chocolate spread, again the amounts are negligible. There is some amount of losses that we would have incurred, let's say in roasting of almonds and, you know, having to write off some of that, or where we didn't class the machines exactly. But the amounts are not significant because contextually, let's say if that phase of our plant, we have multiple phases in that plant, is about 55,000-60,000 square feet. The chocolate is only taking about 5 to 10%, about 10 to 15% of the space. So it's a very limited investment, and it's also a very limited, I would say, downside. However, the investment that we would have made in mastering both sweet corn and chocolate will be significantly higher because these 2 categories were entirely new to us, right? So yes, we do expect that both the startup cost in terms of wastage that we incurred on the setting up of these products and as well the higher initial cost of manufacturing, right? So as you scale up, the cost of labor, the cost of energy, all of that is very high on a per kilo basis, right? And then gradually as you get to full higher level of volume, then those costs come down. Some of that will also happen between now and next year. It does take us time. And that is why our let's say our management expectation is that we'll get to better margin levels both on breakfast cereals and coconut much faster than we would on sweet corn and chocolates, right? But the other two are also large, and chocolate particularly is a very large category. In terms of why do we do multiple things and not a few things, we have believed from day one that we want to build a company which is well diversified. Okay? We want to be one of the most diversified food companies in the country. And if you look at our categories today, we certainly are. We are not only in good categories, we are also in very fast-growing categories, right? So what happens is if you are dependent on a single product, right? It can give you, but it actually at some point it has two risks associated with it. One is vulnerability, because if you have, and in the food business, as we've seen, companies have had issues, right? It makes you very vulnerable. So there is a risk mitigation part of it, right? And the second is the scaling up from a distributor, from a network perspective. So let's say we say, okay, we want to be just in instant popcorn. Now, we would scale up and make instant popcorn big, but beyond the point, the market for instant popcorn at a certain distribution level, let's say after 350,000 stores, is only so much. Now, you can't make your business attractive to that distributor with only instant popcorn. But you can make your proposition advantage to that distributor if you have a portfolio of products which is diversified and which is widespread. So today, that's one of the reasons that we see the benefit via growth rates also coming up, is that as I mentioned earlier, we go to a distributor, we are an attractive proposition. We are an attractive, profitable proposition. And if we are attractive to him, he will distribute our products, we will be able to grow much faster. And the last is, and it's very important, is that a company which is vulnerable to a single commodity will always be more risky than a company which has spread out purchase of commodities. Commodities don't always move in the same manner. Commodities move and vary, have variation because there's money moving from one commodity to the other. So if you buy a large number of commodities, you will always be better off than if you're buying a single commodity. So let's look at the question. Suppose we had been just an edible oil company, which we were some years ago, we'd be vulnerable to a single commodity, which is edible oil, right? This quarter, we've seen the impact, and I'll come to, as you well, you said, the joker in the pack, is we've had a 5 crore impact. If a similar thing had happened to us 5, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to manage it exactly. The entire P&L would have gone for a toss. But that's not the case today, right? Because edible oils contributes to a lower percentage of our business, because we are purchasing other commodities, we become a much more risk-free company. So one of the advantages that a diversified company has is that it's purchasing multiple commodities. Even if there are upward swings in one commodity, there are likely at the same time to be downward swings in another commodity, or the other commodity may not rise as fast. And if that is the case, you're well-placed from a sourcing perspective. And if you look at the other end of a supply chain, you are very well-placed with your customers, your distributors, who are going to take your products to 1 million or 2 million stores, because we also have a nice portfolio to work with. The trick is, how do we bring this all together in a manner that is cost-efficient, that making so many products doesn't cost us the moon, but which I think we've been able to do, right? A lot of our equipment is used equipment. We buy from the Far East as compared to buying from the U.S. And you've seen our depreciation. It hasn't really gone up. One reason, of course, is because of the Unnao fire. But even if you discount that, the depreciation is well controlled. And the primary reason for that is that our CapEx is very, very low relative to the kind of capabilities that we have in terms of manufacturing and revenue generation capabilities. Okay? Last, coming to edible oil, very valid. I mean, you've seen this. We've always said that we don't want to remain an edible oil company because there's vulnerability. In this particular quarter, I think it was a little more than was required, but so that was driven more by the fact that we were working very hard to get this up to 100 index, because we also don't want our volumes in the future to slip away. I think we've accomplished that, and therefore we'll move up. We are in the process of moving our pricing. We are not about to, you know, accept margin losses on edible oils beyond a certain point, and therefore we have taken necessary action. Coming to the future, I would say we are almost there, and I'll tell you why. If you look at, and you know, as I've often mentioned, it's like a swimmer who's, you know, swimming in a pool, right? You wanna do 50 lengths, and when you get to 24, 25, that's when you know, you're really tired, right? But that's when you actually need to push forward, because after that, from the 26th, 27th length, your swimming is very automatic, and it's not difficult at all. So, if you look at this quarter, we achieved about 70 crore of food sales, as I mentioned earlier. And coincidentally, our premium Sunroof edible oils, which is where we make the bulk of our margin, was also about 70 crore. This was true for last quarter as well, right? So we've reached a stage now, and these two together account for 90% plus of our margin, right? Probably a little more than 90%. So, while the foods therefore now is almost equal in terms of the margin driver, the part of the portfolio, the margin is still a little lower because that's the premium edible oils make a very good margin. But we're reaching a point now where if the foods continues to grow at about 20%, which I expect it to do, we would be the foods business would be the single largest contributor to gross margin, right? In other words, we mentioned that it is 41%. If we deliver another 20% growth in the coming quarters, it will be larger than the margin driver business. And that's when everything opens up, right? Because you have, it's the most profitable part of your business. If it grows at an adequate rate, it more than compensates for any attrition that we have in Sunroof in the profitable end of the business, and provides us the money to do both the spending and allow the money to flow down to the P&L. Okay? So I think that's it. Thank you, Anil. And Kimberly, we can go to the next question. I guess that's the last question for the day.
Thank you. The last question is from the line of Siddharth Mandalewala from Concept Investwell Private. Please go ahead. Siddharth, the line is in talk mode. Please go ahead.
I think we can skip Kimberly and go to the next person in the queue. Is there somebody?
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Satish Pardeshi from Centrum. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. I have three questions. Can you break up the 630 crore, what we have done in nine months, broadly, oil, and non-oil? And maybe if you can give broad saliency of RT, RTC. And the next question is, you've not spoken anything about international business, so I'm more keen to understand what's happening in Bangladesh. And, the third one is, what is the CapEx which we are planning for next one and a half year?
Okay, thank you. Satish, your name was changed. Okay, so how should we do it? You would like to get details of revenue of the 630 crore. I'll give it to you between Sunroof oils, Crystal oils, and the food business, right? Okay. So of the 632 crore, Crystal was about 92 crore. Total Sunroof oils were about 345 crore, and our foods business was about 70 crore. Okay, huh? So that's the level at which you know, I think we are very comfortable sharing that in the public domain. The rest, obviously, you have the growth rates and, you know, you have the past, but we wouldn't like to make it any easier for competitors. Okay. In terms of the international business, Bangladesh Look, it's doing very well. The country is, today talking very, very impressive economic growth rates, and it's for real. I was in Dhaka last month, and I stay in a small hotel in Gulshan, and when I go to the roof of that hotel, I just see construction everywhere. Everywhere. I mean, it's really remarkable. When we drive to our factory in Ghazipur, I see construction all the way. So, it's really, we've seen that kind of growth rates in India, and the 8% or 9% that they're quoting as an economy is for real. I think we have now brought in our factory into regular commercial production for Bangladesh. That has happened now, I think, Sweden, for about 8 months now. Yeah. So for the last 8-9 months, we've started the journey. We are making for Bangladesh, in Dhaka and Bangladesh. Therefore, people are buying locally Bangladesh-made products, not imported products from India, right? And we were very worried about how we would make that transition because some companies have struggled, but I must say it's gone very, very smoothly. So we will scale it up, we will scale it up in a steady manner. We don't intend to invest tens of crores because we have a lot of priorities as far as India is also concerned, right? But we'll continue to build this business, and I think it will be a meaningful business. So we are not at the stage where some of our other benchmark companies would be, where they say, "Oh, by the way, we didn't do so good in India, but Bangladesh did very well." We are not at that stage. And neither do we want to be at the stage where we don't do well in India. I think we want to do well in India, but we also want to build these markets as we go along. In terms of the CapEx, I can be more specific about that. I think we've always said that we would limit our CapEx within the cash that we generate, right? So that would be true. That would be true for the coming year as well. I think our capital investments are going to be in the region of about, I would say, 35 to 40 crores, right? So that, we still have cash left over. We continue to create cash outside, because other than CapEx, the big expenditure that we make really is on the dividend, right? Which is about 5-6 crores, if I remember correctly, right? So we don't need CapEx more than a moderate amount, right? As we always said, we will never borrow money for capital. It will all be generated in-house, and we will keep doing it, right? Our gross block right now, relative to our net sales, is quite low relative to most other companies. And of course, one of the reasons it's low is because we do a lot of our manufacturing through third parties for oils, right? So that depresses it. But I think we will continue to build our gross block on a gradual basis, right? And that should be more than adequate to meet our ambitions in terms of a sustained growth in foods. Okay. So I apologize if all the answers were not as detailed as we wanted them to be, but that I hope gives the context. Okay. Thanks, Shirish. Okay. Kimberly, I think that's it. Maybe may I close it now and thank everybody? Okay. All right. So that's it. I'll take Kimberly's silence as an agreement. And, just want to say thank you to all of you for joining us today. Wish you all the best, and we look forward to talking to you in 3 months' time. Cheers.
Thank you. On behalf of Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.